Hi guys, welcome to Made In, a podcast hosted by Asian women to tell stories of our culture and beyond. Made In is a safe living room space where we talk about our upbringing, the dilemmas in our lives, and highlight the beautiful work of POC people that keep us inspired. Thank you for joining us. Hi guys, we're back. Today we got a really awesome special guest. We're really excited for this. We have Chef Roy Choi on the show. He's huge in the LA food scene, you know, brought out the food trucks with Kogi, and from there, you know, never stopped learning and never stopped breaking the rules. On his journey, he hasn't forgotten about his roots, and that's something that's obviously really important to us on our show, about identity, but also about caring about others and the collectivity of other people. So on his show, Broken Bread, and also The Chef Show with Jon Favreau, we get to see a lot of that kind of behind the scenes, what goes into being a chef, but also giving back at the same time. On a personal note, he's a great Korean-American, Asian-American role model that we look up to, someone that we, you know, really respect, who's really speaking out for us, but also doing their job in terms of, you know, being holistic about care, about wellness, about food, about everything. So thank you so much for joining us.
Be here.
Woo!
Yeah, I'm a big fan of you guys too. So great to be here.
Don't say that.
Thank
That's
you
amazing.
So much. Yeah. Best day of 2021 thus far. But Roy, yeah, we wanted to start the interview by asking you, where are you made in? You can take this wherever you would like, geographically, philosophically, wherever.
Well, physically, I think I was made in a bedroom, probably. And
maybe.
Cosmically, I don't know. I don't really believe in linear time and, you know, and start or finish. I feel like there are parallel universes and existences and time. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe I haven't even been made yet. I don't want to take it there on this podcast. So let's just say the bedroom. Let's just say
All right. That's a good answer too. Were you born in America or were you born in Korea?
I was born in Seoul, Korea, in like the older part of the city, north of the river, in an area that's now actually becoming hip, but it's called which is like, it's like one of the oldest business districts of Seoul. And then but now there are a lot of bars and stuff that pop up. I was born there, and then we came to LA when I was around 2 years old.
And I'm kind of a 1.5 generation myself. I moved to Canada when I was 10 years old. So I don't know if you have memories of being in Korea, but as you kind of grew up in America, when was kind of like the moment you realized you are a Korean American and that can mean so many different things, but when did you kind of come into honoring that culture and kind of embracing it?
I don't know. For me, growing up in LA was never really that struggle. I've heard a lot of Asian Americans, especially those that grow up maybe in a city like Toronto or through the Midwest, you know, or the South, or other parts of the country that aren't so concentrated in a big city like Los Angeles. I've heard the struggles and, you know, and I firsthand understand some of the passive aggressive like racism and under the breath accounts that you go through growing up as a kid, whether that's with your school lunch or just people being, you know, the life that we have inside our home and why our parents don't speak English and why our house is the way it does and all those things. But being from LA, I never really had an issue with any of that stuff. So for me growing up here, I was always kind of like, I was like a mural of the city. Like I took on my Asian side. I took on my street side. I took on my educational side, my family life, my ups and downs and everything. And I think I'm just the product of the city. I don't remember Korea at all. I'm probably more close to people I grew up, like spiritually people I grew up with here in Los Angeles that are either Latino or African-American or just American than I am with people from Korea. You know, just like, I guess just the way my life is, but that doesn't make me any less Asian. You know, what I've always dealt with my whole life is why does Asian American have to be an umbrella term to define who we are individually? And I never understood that. I never understood that I had to live within this over-encompassing identity mark of who I was, you know, because a lot of my other friends didn't have that, you know, like if you were just a mutt kid that had lineages all over the place, it's not like you had to live under the moniker that, you know, you were Scottish, British, Scotian, you know, Ukrainian and, you know, Bulgarian, you know, you didn't have to live into those things. So I always lived my life, I guess, running away from that moniker and trying to, it's a weird kind of like inverse relationship. I tried to be as Asian as I could be without being Asian. And I think Kogi is a good representation of that. I don't know if y'all know about the Kogi truck, but the Kogi truck, you know, we serve this taco that tastes like the city of LA, and it's a mix between like all different flavors of like tacos and Korean barbecue and Korean salad and banchan and all these things. And but we never came out to the world as being like an Asian American experience there and started serving the streets. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it, without having to wear Asian American on our chest, I think we moved the identity of Asian American culture a lot further than if we were coming out of the gates trying to understand.
Right.
So by not being Asian, actually Korea, Kogi got people to eat kimchi. So that's kind of like contribution in my relationship. The word is relationship. Being Asian American, I never had an issue. I never had drama with it, but I always struggled with more. You know what I mean? Let me sum it up with this, because you know, I'm just a kind of a imperfect street kid. So it's just, I never had issues with people outside of Asians. You know, talk to me, because I could talk back.
Yeah.
You know, like I could clap back just as fast as someone's clapping.
Yeah.
I had an issue with more my own race, my own culture, trying
Koreans,
to suppress all this gloriousness, you know, like all the fantastic psychedelic, like emergence of who we can become as humans, you know. And so I had more issue with that than I did with people making fun of who I was.
I think that's really interesting, because I mean, you know, reading up on you and watching a lot of your stuff, always not like, you know, you are a rule breaker, and I know you've said in interviews and stuff, but it's more so like you never saw yourself in that box. And it's kind of because of who you grew up with and what who you identified with, you never felt that way. Some people that we have on the show, and I think often we say this to ourselves too, is like, you know, when we grew up as Asian, I had the family pressure of like, you know, finding that really cool, like good job, or, you know, the whole doctor lawyer thing. But it's like for you, not right out of the gate, I'm sure there's times where there are moments of identity and still understanding, but you didn't seem to feel like you were held back. So, you know, reading about your journey, I saw you, you know, went to cooking school, you managed some, you know, you did the traditional, I wouldn't say traditional, but the restaurant route basically. And then suddenly you decided, you know, to create something that was so you, like so LA, like that's an embodiment of who you are. And when you came to that discovery, like when you're doing the path, and I don't know if you always wanted to be a chef or always in the restaurant scene, did you ever feel like, man, this is like a really weird way to get to where I want to be, and I don't even know where I want to be, kind of thing?
Not really personally, because for me, restaurants came at a time where I had really nothing left. So I was like rock bottom. And being Asian, it's not really like copacetic to talk about rock bottom, you know, like as if failure doesn't exist. You know, and that's something I think we need to nurture more within future generations, you know, is we have to allow our children and our youth to fail. Let that failure define, you know, who they are, ultimately who they are as people. Let that failure develop who they are instead of define who they are. You know, I may be a rule breaker, but I was always in tune and appreciative of my Asian roots, because instead of like rebelling against it, I look at it more like, I led multiple lives in a way. I think without my Asian heritage and my family, I may have spun way out of control. So appreciation in the fact that I am Asian, because it kept at least one string tied to my shoe, you know, my shoe way all the way. Because, you know, I was out there doing all kinds of crazy stuff, but being Asian, no matter what I was doing, even if I was high out of my fucking mind, I chose 6 p.m., you know, and just one time, like I was like tripping on acid, and I got in this huge fight and I jumped off this cliff and I was covered in bruises everywhere. But I had to pick up my grandmother the next morning at LAX. And so like,
your high money was like,
you know, being Asian, I went through with the whole thing and I played it off like nothing was wrong. Yeah. Clearly something was wrong. And my grandma my grandma played it off like nothing was wrong. And
No one talks about it.
But that thing is what kept me, again, tied at least by one string to reality. If I didn't have that, and I know a lot of friends that I grew up with that didn't have that structure or that nutritional structure with food and everything and love, I don't know where I'd be right now. So I do that, but but yeah, with cooking, I guess where it leads to with that kind of preface is that I've seen some dark days, and I it wasn't like I planned on cooking. It wasn't something that was nurtured within my family. Eating and cooking was nurtured, but not as a profession. I'm sure you both grew up around, you know, elders feeding you with their fingers and just, you know, reaching across the table and people food in your mouth and, you know, and all the things. I grew up in that type of environment, like multiplied by 100. My whole family is like just ridiculous as far as their relationship to food. And we owned restaurants growing up. So I grew up all throughout my elementary days and early junior high in restaurants and liquor stores. And so it wasn't something that you're supposed to do. You know, our parents are supposed to have come here to do this work in order for us to an office.
Right.
But I just never fit in. And by the time I was like 25, 26, I had burned so many bridges and was kind of like couch surfing with pretty much probably my last couch. And that's when I found cooking. You know, it's kind of romantic to tell it now in hindsight. It was really scary. You know, I was kind of a deadbeat piece of shit.
Look at you now.
I'm lucky I had that last couch, you know, and then, and so from there, I just started cooking professionally. It was the last thing that I had that inspired me. And you know, not a lot of us are lucky enough to have that last couch or that last epiphany. Luckily I did. And it just took a while. But when I first landed at culinary school, it was the first time that I felt, you know, like I was meant to do something, you know, like a chef coat and a hat. And, touched the knife. You know, I had cooked before in our restaurant, and I cooked, you know, all throughout high school, like working as a prep cook just to make money. But those were just like jobs. But once I started cooking professionally, it was on. I didn't find it in a way where it was premeditated. I found it, you know, as a rescue.
And, you know, you said you were talking about the chef coat and the chef hat and feeling like you actually kind of like, I want to turn this into something that's me. But it was something that came out of necessity because it was a survival thing. And for me, it's like when we talk about great chefs nowadays, I'm sure it's a bit more different than it was before. But one thing that I really want to ask is like, you've been all over the place. You've done TV, you've cooked for almost everything and everyone. And even to that, you still stay to your roots. I saw your recent initiative with Kogi, but you guys are, you know, doing the donation things and the Venmo things, and it really gives back as much as you guys can get. And I think one really, I was watching a video, but the line that you had said in there was something about how, you know, we're not making money. It's not like we're out here profiting. We're here breaking even, but at the same time, like, how do we change it? So I guess, you know, becoming a restaurant, becoming a chef, owning a business, I feel more and more this year, people really need to realize that it's not just about making money. Yeah, it's about making money for sure, but there is worth in giving back and so much. And so for you throughout your journey, when did that, I mean, I think you lived through a lot of some struggle too. So like, is that something that you always wanted to carry, that you've always had because you lived through it and also you've seen it too?
Yeah, I've always definitely, that's always been my philosophy and outlook on life. It just was never validated. Until, and what I mean by that is that, you know, I've never looked at the world through the lens of profit or this like escalating ladder of success, you know, and never understood the value of possessions and material possessions. Even when I was younger, you know, like I never really, it's just not how I comprehended the world. But everything around me in the world, that's how the world was comprehended. So what I mean by this, if I had money in my pocket, I would take it out and give it to anyone that was around me. if I had food in my hand, I would break it and give it to people around me. Those are the things that I cherish the most. But, you know, as I was growing up and all those things, so, you know, not just for my family, I mean, again, for my whole surroundings, that was always pressed into me that those things were worthless and that I was weak and that those things had no value and you're just taking advantage of. And the reason why I couldn't really argue back is because I didn't have, you know, a lot of people are able to find their creative or artistic expression very young. And so they're able to come back with maybe something, whether that's a song, a dance, you know, a drawing, to defend what they're doing. I didn't really have that. I didn't find my voice until my late 20s. You know, so I had to live for like 26 years being told that everything that I believe in was worthless. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you know, and then I went through cooking, which I look at with, you know, my professional cooking, which I look at now as kind of my training. And then once I lost everything and Kogi started, I finally was able to fulfill my form, you know, and that was all those things that I believed in when I was younger, which is giving back, giving away, being something that's very fluid. So Kogi is built on those foundations of hanging out with your friends in a parking lot, devaluing material possessions and sharing everything that you have with each other. And through that, we create wealth and prosperity. But it's a different type of wealth and prosperity. It's true communal wealth and prosperity. And those are the foundations of the Kogi truck. It just took me a long time to figure that out and to find the vehicle to be able to express that. And what I found out through Kogi is that by having the truck be my kind of, I guess, my microphone in a way to be able to express those things, I found that there are a lot of other people in this world that believe the same, you know? And it created this movement. And it's not something that I have to point out or defend anymore. The proof is right there, you know. The fact that Kogi is still here 12 years later and we're stronger than we ever were. And especially in a economy that's been flipped upside down now by the pandemic, like we found ways to double down on what we believe in and stay stronger when everything around us is crumbling, you know, like the whole system here in the United States is crumbling, you know, but instead of like being scared or reacting to it or, you know, blaming some bigger force, we kind of double down on taking care of those around us. Like Kogi is a street truck. We don't really think of like we think of the global problems, but we're very realistic and pragmatic about what we can control and what we can affect. Mm-hmm. And so we don't try to think politically or big frame in macro in that sense. We just try to take care of each person that's next to us, each block, each street, each corner. And that's what we've been doing since day one. And that just mushrooms and grows. And, you know, I just hope that can be a prism for other or, you know, kind of a looking glass for others that want to affect change too, is that you don't have to affect change on a grand scale at the beginning. It could literally be one person or two people. We started with just handing out tacos for free, and we're here 12 years later handing out tacos for free still.
Yeah.
With a different purpose.
So
you know?
Cool.
And so it all comes together.
But being able to have grown this platform 12 years ago till now, and being a Korean American, personally, something that Evie and I speak about a lot is the lack of representation of maybe this unconventional modern minority Asian career path that someone can have, and just really earning for that kind of representation we can have. Kind of being in this position now, knowing what you look like and what your background is, does that play a role into deciding on what kind of projects you want to take on next and what kind of legacy or pave, like you're paving for the younger generation?
Thank you for that question. Yes, yes. I think about that every day. I mean, we're in 21 and for Asian males, it's still Bruce Lee.
Exactly.
I mean, it's ridiculous almost, you know, and, you know, there are no flawed characters for young Asian kids to attach themselves to or to look up to. You know, you look at the modern music space, you know, television and movie space, very, very small percentage that we have any influence at all or any of our culture is represented in modern media. And so, yeah, I think about it all the time in all the projects that I do, you know, and then now that I'm, I have opportunity to move into more media, which is television and unscripted, you know, I'm thinking of that, you know, I'm thinking of doing scripted projects where we can create characters where I can take myself out of the burden of being who I am and whether or not I'm going to upset people or I will tarnish my family's name or anything and just write characters, these characters that I look, I always say like, we need like our Tony Montana, you know, or our like our Al Pacino. Like I want to see characters out there that are not, you know, desirable, you know, but you can't stop, you know, caring for them or believing in them. And so I think about that from a creative and scripted level. The projects that I do on business, I always try to, you know, there are some decisions I made in the past coming up, you know, even in the last 12 years where I thought I was making the right decisions because they were aligned with products that I grew up with. But I realized as I was growing with it, that even though I may believe in a bag of chips or you know, a cookie or canned meat product or whatever, I decided a few years back that those are things that I just don't want to consciously align myself with. So on a business end, I try to make decisions and align myself with companies that I feel are doing good, you know, that are wholesome and have a good, like, moral compass within them, you know. So now instead of doing things with maybe junk food, I'm trying to align myself with, you know, products built around vegetables or, you know, organizations or entities that are giving back. And those are just a lot of the things that conscious decisions that I truly believe in. By doing that, what happens is you narrow maybe your opportunities, but you strengthen the ones that you've decided to believe in. And you start to fulfill some sort of, I guess, life purpose, you know. You know, a lot of it also growing up when you're kind of an independent artist or independent person, there sometimes is this like belief that, you know, corporate is here and then, you know, individualism is here. And there's always this constant battle between small and big. If you can reframe your mind and really look for good people out there in the world, you can find that also in the corporate world as well. And so I can't stop, you know, business and corporations from reaching out to me, but I can decide who I want to align with and let those become inspiration for, again, future generations, where they don't have to take, and this can apply to an up and coming, you know, music artist. It can apply to an up and coming actor. You don't have to take the lowest hanging fruit. You don't have to take that paycheck right there, because if you stay true to what's really burning inside of you, what you really believe in, those, you know, and if you manifest that, those things will appear, you know. And I know if you're young right now and you're struggling and you just need that check, that this might sound like bullshit, you know, but
that's true.
You know, again, you can make bad decisions. I'll totally, you know, totally accept any mistakes. I'm not going to judge anyone, but I just want to if you do need inspiration, that you don't have to take the lowest hanging fruit, you know, for now. But if you stay true to what you believe in, things will start to appear and you'll be able to slowly manifest yourself closer with people that are aligned with you. And so, yeah, I make that decision. I got the nickname kind of like as the oversight committee, like of myself, you know, and my team. And so, you know, a simple fact that Kogi is still a very small company is a is a big part of the decisions that we make. It's, I don't know, man, like in this world where we lose so much belief in a lot of things, it's sometimes there's value in believing in the small things that mean something to you. And the independent spirit was more valuable than making hundreds of millions of dollars and losing touch with what we represent. So, I do that every day. Yeah. I'm just getting better with it now. So I can't say that I was perfect with it before, but I'm getting better. I'm making better decisions and I'm trying to not get so emotional and mad at things. You know what I mean? Like even up 5 years ago, I would get pissed off at shit, you know, and trying to be a lot more like holistic about things, but without losing, I don't know, my fangs towards things, you know, like my, towards things like
comes out sometimes.
I'm still like, I don't even know how to put it. It's just, I'm all about like kindness and peace and generosity, but I'm also trying to like kick down doors at the same time. So it's a really weird intersection.
It's a balance.
Yeah. You know, there's an effectiveness in the way that, like we said, like you've done it before. You know, you talk about food waste. You go visit these people. You know, we learn about it, and not through a way that's. Like, I'm someone who yells out a lot of stuff on Twitter. I've been really trying not to be so bad about it, but you know,
I don't know what other words to.
Yeah, messed. But you know, seeing the other strategies and how people have also approached it. For me, it was important a bit to be like, "Yo, I'm an Asian woman. I'm not gonna say it nicely. I'm not gonna be kind to you. I'm just not that I'm not kind. It's just I'm gonna say it how I feel. I feel whatever." But what you're talking about finding good people, and that hasn't been, and even the companies I support and everything like that, I haven't really even really, really thought about until this year, like really sent me for that. I would just like, now I really want to look who owns the company, who's in the boardroom. Those things are so important to me now. And I think it's something that for me, I don't know if this relates to you, but you had mentioned this, that saying, you know, growing up in my Asian, in my family, we're Chinese, we don't talk about bad things ever. Like, never. You just don't do it. You share love over fruit or food, but you don't really say it. Like, we're not affectionate in that kind of way. But in a way, it kind of makes it, the one downfall I would say is like, it made me really insular for a long time. Like, I didn't want to say anything bad. I didn't want to say, you know, speak my mind, or, you know, speak about social justice. And like, maybe you had said, it wasn't until your mid-20s when you were like, I kind of figured this out. Like, I was so busy, you know, struggling and doing different things that you're like, I can finally give back and do that. And that's why I think for you being on the show is so important to us, because you're someone, you know, who has that platform now, but didn't forget the roots. And we always want to encourage, like, even my parents, you know, talking about to my parents about Black Lives Matter. That was obviously a struggle, like translation, you know, language and stuff, going through all that. But I think this year really disillusioned, like I felt really disillusioned by a lot of stuff I grew up that seemed to be really Asian, you know, staying really close to your pack and not speaking about issues, not getting in trouble, you know, not raising your voice. So, and I don't know if this attributes to why there are such, not that there's such few, but there aren't that many, there isn't much Asian representation out there. It's, I hope people feel like there is strength and a safe place for them to speak out. So for you, like, is that something that came with when you really felt like you're, like at Kogi, like you were like, this is me. This is so me. Like I can speak out for, cause I truly believe in this kind of thing. Whereas you spent like the beginning part kind of figuring.
And we're getting better every day. I mean, look, you guys have a podcast, you know, me coming up, there was nothing for people like me coming up as an Asian in America, you know, before social media and before podcasting and stuff like there, you know, there's nothing fine other than like comic books but for us with Kogi, we found Twitter very early, you know, we were there at the very
right,
and you know, Kogi is a team, we're like a co-op, and we kind of had our roles, and the funny thing though is all of us had nothing going on, like none of us had jobs, we all of us had either gotten fired or never had a job or just like floating through life, and we were just trying to figure life out, and so everyone had nothing to lose. So we just started expressing ourselves in the moment, you know, and not filtering anything, and what was weird but that the world was going through the same kind of transformation. And so it was a very special moment in time where we were just putting this thing out into the world. And then the world itself was really hurting and they were looking for something to attach themselves to. Mm. It became this kind of spiritual scavenger hunt that people, life sucked so bad that once kind of people got our message, you know, it was like this radio frequency. And they got our message that they had to just come find us. It was like a rave party or some sort of Burning Man thing, you know, like. Somehow
spiritual experience
find the truck. Yeah. And so there were thousands of people on the street every single night just showing up, you know, and we figured out kind of our whole culture together, how to stand in line. You know, there was no blueprint, no one explained this stuff, you know. You know, navigating, you know, law enforcement, the streets, the police, everything, and still being able to serve thousands of people every night in residential and business neighborhoods. It was a beautiful moment, and it was all connected through this new technology, you know, because the phones had just come out around that time too, you know.
Yeah.
And so the core human side of it for us was that a lot of us had nothing else to do or lose, you know. It was very much like kind of like Stand By Me, you know, like where it's like, you want to go see a dead body? Yeah.
Okay.
And that was kind of cokey, you know. It's like, want to go sell tacos on the street? Yeah, I ain't doing shit, you know, all this. And and then so it didn't really start out as anything deep, but by being out there every night and serving and seeing the energy that was being transferred, you know, we didn't create cokey. It was the energy that happened on the streets, you know. I like to believe that it was all, there was something there that was swirling and it just blew up and, you know, it just affected the whole country. And then it started to affect the whole world. The reason I don't ever forget where we come from, because how do you forget that? You know, like, how do you forget, like, coming from nothing, doing everything the best you can, losing everything, and going back to the streets and being a part of this whole new expression of life. And so I was put in a position where I was meant to be here and do this and coke the truck at that moment. And until I'm physically gone, I feel like my responsibility is to continue to water that plant. I don't know. It affects a lot personally though, because a lot of the decisions, but I'm okay with that again, because like my values weren't set in getting rich,
profit.
Get rich. You know, I don't mind becoming rich, but I want to become rich so that I can share that. You know, if I ever become like a multi millionaire or billionaire, you know, I want everyone that was a part of this to be a part of my success as well. Say this one thing: a lot of people don't know about Koki is I don't make any money from my restaurant endeavors. If you really investigate, and I know you guys are reporters, right? Or journalists?
Evie's a journalist. I work in.
So if you were really to investigate, and if this was a long form investigative story and you broke apart all the pieces, get all my restaurants. Really, if you dig in and you look at the correlation and the relationship between everything, there's no way any of that stuff should make sense or make any money. And it's purposely designed that way. I try to consciously make these businesses where, and going back to all the stuff we were talking about earlier, but where there's this very positive flow of prosperity, like this beautiful clean river that's just gushing, but there's no buildup anywhere. It's just constantly, you're wondering where like all that water goes, but it's just constantly flowing in this even form. And that's really like my food businesses. These things that we serve, whether it was at Chego or Kogi or Hot, Best Friend, Comps, all these places that I've had, A-Frame. These foods should be at least probably 30 to 50% more than they are. So for example, the Coke started it at $2. It's 12 years later with all of the fluctuations in
inflation.
It's $2.50 now.
No.
And that taco should probably, if I was to just put it up against, you know, in the framework and in the graph of all like chef driven concept type foods, it probably should be like $8 to $10 taco because of
go
into it. Mm-hmm. But our purpose is to cut away all profit. And again, that's why no one's really ever invested in us, because people look at our business, they're like, how does this work? Where's your profit? And like, our profit, our profit is in humanity.
Where's the lie, though? Where's the lie?
but we're here like stronger than ever. We're able to employ our team. We're not in debt. You know, we're healthy, we're strong, and that's got to be worth something, you know. So our profit is in that people can access our food at an affordable price, create community, and create flavor and nutrition within their bodies without overthinking. That's really the purpose of Kogi, is to get people to eat ginger, garlic, onion, you know, scallions, carrots, chilies, all these things without thinking that they're eating them, you know. And I believe that very much like my Asian identity, that subversive way will make them healthier and seek better foods and live more robust lives. Mm-hmm. Because the way that health is designed for a lot of us here in Western culture, especially in America, is that it's either something that is of privilege or something that's not cool, you know, like kind of forced upon us. So, you know, I feel like, you know, we have to raise people to be healthy, but we don't have to force them to be healthy. So Kogi is all about that. And that's kind of like our whole life and our business. And I'm just proving that you can
do
things without only profit.
Yeah. To speak on behalf of me and Evie, I think we're both in such awe of like the holistic approach and the fact that, you know, you never sold out, and your ethos and your values that when you first started sitting on that last couch to where you are now is incredibly inspirational. And hopefully that all their listeners that are listening, it's not only on your burden to kind of, you know, trailblaze the way for us. Like, you made such an amazing foundation for us to kind of follow through, and we're so excited to see what everyone is nourishing their bodies with and to be able to kind of continue to be a representation that we can look up to. So thank you so much for all the knowledge and the story that you shared with us, and we're so excited to see where you're gonna go and where all the rest of the Asian generation will be coming after you.
Yeah, I feel like I'm just getting started, so maybe we'll check back in a few years or whatever.
We'd be honored.
2 years. I'll check you in like 6 months. I'll find you.
We will hunt you.
Especially, you know, last thing I'll leave you with is like, I feel I'm a late bloomer. So all you late bloomers out there, you know, I send you love, you know, and that, you know, don't fall into the traps that society makes you believe that we live in this linear A to Z life where we only succeed at a certain age. And then you're supposed to like, the bell curve is supposed to drop off and you're supposed to just die, you know, boring, useless death as you go into your 30s or 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s or whatever.
Not true.
You know, it's not true. You know, like, why believe that you have to waste the second half of your life, you know, wherever it is, you know, wherever it's in your teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever. You know, you can constantly reinvent yourself. And again, even though a lot has happened in my life, I feel like that's all led me to this point where, you know, just getting started. I'm on your podcast now.
You're just kidding.
Yeah, I'm just getting started.
Yay. Okay, thank you so much for doing this. It really means so much to us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Made In. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at imadein_. We would love to hear from you and keep the conversation going. Stay safe until next time.